We the voices behind the faith of the Hawaiian nation, the Hawaiian race, rise for justice, the day has come for all our people to stand as one. E ala e, e ala e. We the voices behind the face, the Hawaiian nation, Hawaiian race, rise for justice, the day has come for all our people to stand as one. E ala e, e ala e.
Well, aloha, everyone. Aloha. This is KP here in the beautiful Big Island of Hawaii, and we are now we have a special show today. It's October 24th, 2014, and we have a special show today that I think a lot of you will enjoy, and you'll be introduced to some things that about the Kingdom of Hawaii, which some of you may or may not be familiar with. Of course, that includes everybody. If you may or you may not. But first of all, we have two people on the show today. First, I'd like to introduce Lanny Sinkin, who's worked with the King of Hawaii for quite some time. Lanny, can you introduce yourself again? Aloha.
Sure. aloha. Thank you, Kevin Lapele, and thank you for doing these shows. I think it's an opportunity for us to share with the rest of the world the exciting developments that are going on in the kingdom and the exciting potential that exists for the vision that the kingdom holds. I have been active with the sovereignty movement in Hawaii for a long time. I lived in Hawaii for 17 years. And during that period of time, I came to know Kalihi, the king, and have been working with him for the last 8 or 9 years on restoration of the kingdom. And my position is Ali'i Manaʻo Nui, and it is a position that was created by the last queen of Hawaii, Queen Liliʻuokalani. And she created it as a position that would be filled by a person whose responsibility would be to speak the truth always to the monarch with no fear of retribution or punishment. It was a very creative position that she formed there to be sure that at least one person in her cabinet or privy council was always required, basically, to speak the truth, even if it was hurtful or embarrassed her or whatever. Because of the illegal overthrow of the kingdom, she never had an opportunity to fill that position. And when the king was in the process of beginning the restoration of the nation, he read about that position, learned about that position, and wanted to fill that position. I was serving as his chief counsel at the time, and he asked me if I would be willing to fulfill that position, and I said that I would. So I have been serving as a Ali'i Manaʻo Nui for the last 8 or 9 years. To the king.
Well, thank you, Lanny. We thank you for your service, and we will be talking together here about a few things that I think several people felt needed to be addressed. And I know you've got a lot of perhaps a more extended history with it than I won't call her the other participant. No, I won't say that. She's the she is the Chief Justice of the Kingdom of Hawaii, and Jennifer Pawlowski. And Jennifer, aloha and welcome to the KP Radio Show.
Aloha, KP. Thank you for having me on as your guest.
And I know that you've been, first of all, could you give us a little bit of your background, you know, what your specialties have been, and you don't have to go into too much detail, but just basically I'm trying to find out what brought you to Hawaii and how you connected with the kingdom.
My path was a little bit different than Lanny's. It was a much more abrupt. I had been working for about seven years in the intellectual property, patent, trademark, and copyright litigation field, with a lot of also commercial transaction litigation, and for a firm in San Jose. And, well, I worked for them for several years, but I've been litigating for seven. And I was having some health problems, just unusual health problems that the doctor really couldn't figure out. It ended up being a very, very serious cancer. And it popped up a couple different times, made me very, very sick. And at one point, I was required to take a 45-day medical leave from my job. And it was on that leave, actually, that I started to realize that it had been years since I had seen a sunrise. It had been years since I had seen a sunset. I hadn't seen the ocean, even though I lived in San Jose, which is only an hour from the ocean. Hadn't seen the ocean in months. And I knew I needed to make a change. Mm-hmm. I needed something to be different. And to make a long story short, when I got done with that 45-day leave, I gave my notice at the law firm. And my parents decided that they were very happy because I was so, so sick. And they discovered I had a very, very severe gluten allergy, and that's what caused all my health issues. So cutting out gluten really just helped me get my health back in almost no time at all. And my parents actually were so excited to have me back, because I probably was given about 6 months to live because my organs were shutting down. But once I cut the gluten out, health got restored very nicely. And we went to a conference in Carefree, Arizona. And I didn't know what the conference was about. I had no idea. But a place called Carefree sounded just up my alley at that time. So I went with my parents to Carefree, and I met some very interesting individuals who were doing some wonderful work here on the islands. And it was the most incredible experience I'd ever had, because I felt right then and there that I needed to get to the island. I felt it. And I literally did this weirdest thing. I actually took off my shoes and socks, and I went out into the desert, and I said, is this for me? Because it feels like it's for me. It feels like this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And all I can describe it as is an intense energy of, like, light that coursed through my body. And I said, yeah, I've got to go. Got to go to Hawaii. So I spent the next 6 months really recovering and getting my health back on track. And then I moved out here a little over a year and a half ago. And through my travels out here, I met several women who are very active in the Hawaiian sovereignty movement. Met a wonderful woman named Auntie Aho, who was doing some great work for Hawaii. And mm-hmm. It was through my relationship with Aho that I met Edmund Kalei Silva Jr., who is the King of Hawaii. And we had begun working together on a few different projects that were of a legal matter concerning jurisdiction of the federal government over these islands. And I had been doing some research for him. And it was through that project, we were trying to help some Hawaiian people that the king felt were improperly imprisoned and that were basically being held under federal jurisdiction and they should not have been. So I did a bunch of memorandums for him and some legal research and wrote some letters for him. And that is when he asked me to be his chief justice. And that was a little less than a year ago today. So I've been serving as chief justice for Edmund Kalei Silva Jr. for the last year, I would say.
Oh, well, did you meet on Oahu or on Maui or one of the other islands?
Yes, I was on Oahu. I was actually at Auntie Aho's house. And we were doing some paperwork together. I've been actively assisting and trying to save a lot of Hawaiian homes from foreclosure and just from all the mess that goes on with the fraud the banks are committing all over the world. And I was attempting to use Hawaiian patents because the Hawaiian kingdom has its own patenting system that dates back over 200 years ago. And I was working with Aho doing some of that work. And I was at her house assisting with some of that paperwork when I met Kalei for the first time.
Okay. Well, so what convinced you that this guy, Edmund K. Silva Jr., was what we'll call the real deal as far as being with the kingdom and being the king of the Kingdom of Hawaii?
Well, you can respond to that either in a 3D sense, or you can respond to it in a higher consciousness sense. But in the 3D sense, you know, he's got everything that a leader needs. You know, he's got the genealogy, he's got the pedigree, he's got the experience. he fits that mold in every way, shape, or form. And the things that he has done, because there are many, many groups out here that are trying to restore the nation, but for various reasons that I won't get into, they're unsuccessful for many different reasons. But of all of these groups, there is no one that has, there's a lot of self-interest that goes on in a lot of these groups, things that are being done for whoever that proposed leader is at the time. But with Kalihi, the things that he has done as a leader for the nation, for the people. Those are the interests that he serves. He truly works for the people as a true king should. And that is something that is very, very different than I've seen in the other groups, is that he's not concerned about himself so much as he is his nation and his people. And that is a king to me. But in the higher consciousness realm, it's a feeling. When I first spoke to him, when you first meet him, there truly is an energy about him that is very unique and very special. And it is a type of energy, it's the only type of energy that I have ever come across that in my view is capable of restoring an entire nation from illegal occupation. Because it's a connectedness to the people and to the land that is very, very spiritual. And if anyone who is awake meets this man, it is impossible to ignore. So that is how I knew that he truly is the king.
Well, I really appreciate you sharing that, Jennifer. And I know that, you know, the last show, Lanny talked about his connection and realizing that there was so much being done to block this this person from getting out of prison, and that was part of his awakening, that this guy really, I mean, that was part of it. So there's, in any event, what I'd like to do now, Lanny, if we go back to you, one of the issues that came up with, and this was shared to me by Edmund K. Silva, that I think some of the people felt that they wanted to cover something which I'd never heard of before I met, started looking into the Kingdom of Hawaii, and that has to, it's something called the Royal Kupuna Exchange. I wondered if you could give us a little bit of a background as to what this thing was. And I know that supposedly the king was associated with, someone said that the king, that they took on the king's presence in this exchange as if he were backing it. And apparently, my understanding is he didn't know anything about it. So instead of me telling me everything, I take it you started dealing with this a few years ago.
I'd be happy to tell the story. And before getting the story part of it, I want to just suggest that people listen to this carefully as a lesson in what we are dealing with, and to be slow to reach conclusions until you have all the facts. What we're dealing with in Hawaii right now are people who have had their nation stolen from them 130 years ago, if you will, and who are have been subject to all kinds of abuse. Their religion was taken away from them, their social system was taken away, their language was taken away for a while. It was illegal to speak Hawaiian in the schools. Their economic system of shared land ownership and all of the systems that created their civilization were essentially either disrupted or destroyed by the missionaries and their descendants. And that has badly damaged the people of Hawaii, who we are now trying to rally to restore their nation. And one of the effects of that kind of abuse is people are very quick to judge whether someone's good, bad, or indifferent, without necessarily taking the time to thoroughly explore what's gone on. So talking about the Royal Kupuna Exchange, this is one of those moments where that lesson can be brought home. So what happened was, a man came to some of the elders on the island of Hawaii and said that he had access to a great deal of gold and that he wanted to donate that gold to the restored Kingdom of Hawaii. The elders he was talking to had formed a government, issued a proclamation, adopted a constitution, and selected Edmund Kaligi Silva Jr. as the king. So this other man comes to some of those elders and says he would like to put his gold at the service of the kingdom. And he suggested to them that what they could do was issue bonds that would be backed by this gold and use the proceeds of the bonds to restore the nation, set up the government, do the programs, all the things they wanted to do to restore the nation. But they thought it was a wonderful idea. They picked it up and ran with it and created the Royal Kupuna Exchange, which supposedly was offering bonds backed by gold, where the proceeds of the sale would be used to restore the kingdom. And in that website, because they had selected Kaligi as the king, they included him on the website and mentioned him as the king on the website. So one day I got a call that there was this website that had the king's name on it. And did I know anything about it? Because it didn't look legitimate. And I checked on the website. I found his name on it. I called him. He was still in prison at the time. I called him in the prison in Colorado, and I said, do you know anything about the Royal Kupuna Exchange? And he said he did not. What is it? And I said, well, it's a website that's offering bonds backed by gold to restore the kingdom, and it's got your name on it. He said, well, I never gave my permission to have my name on that, and I don't know anything about it. So I contacted the webmaster, and I said that the king's name should be taken off of this website, or the website itself should be taken down. Well, as it turned out, the man who said he had gold was a con artist, and that he had conned the elders into believing he had this gold and getting them to set up this website and to try and sell bonds, I guess, and take the money and run. But he was exposed, and that was when I insisted that the website come down, because it was all based on a fraud. But meanwhile, the authorities had taken enforcement action against the Kupuna, Royal Kupuna Exchange website as selling securities improperly, that kind of thing, and were forcing them to out of the field. But the damage was done. The king's name was on the website, and anybody familiar with the internet knows it doesn't matter what you do. Once something's on the internet, it stays there. I went through the internet with every effort I could, locating wherever this story appeared that he was part of some kind of scam, and told them the facts and asked them to take it down. And even where people took things down because it wasn't true, they're cached on the internet. So you can still find some of those pages. You can still find, there's one newspaper that has a story that talks about him being part of this fraud, and I had written directly to them and asked them to take it down or correct it, and they won't, because they're opposed to the restoration of the kingdom. So they like having the king be discredited by a false story. But that's essentially what we're dealing with in the Royal Kupuna Exchange. And I mentioned that history of abuse and oppression because I think that that's the heart of what really happened here. This guy was able to con the elders because they were so desperately looking for some kind of lifeline after such a long time that would allow them to fulfill their responsibility that they perceived to the ancestors who had already passed away to restore the nation that the ancestors had taken away from them. So they saw this as an opportunity. They didn't check the guy's credentials well enough, or they probably didn't even know how to Google him and go see who he was and whether he'd been involved in things before. They just saw, you know, a gift from heaven, this man with the gold that was going to help him restore the kingdom. And because they picked Kaligi as the king, they just put his name on the website. And, you know, it turned out to be a fraud. But it was not, I don't consider it the responsibility of the elders, and certainly not the responsibility of the king, who knew nothing about it, for what happened.
Well, And we'll have the documents. I'm going to put the documents up, or not the documents, but I just the letter that you wrote on the.
I did a summary of this whole thing.
A summary, yeah. So we'll put this up as well, and just so people can read it if they want to. Jennifer, did you have any understanding about the Royal? Did you ever talk with Kaylee about the Royal Kapuna Exchange, or did you have any dealings with this?
This happened well before I met Kaylee, but it is something that he was very adamant about when he met me, is that he felt it was somewhat of a thorn in his side, that he just wanted to get rid of it. And could I do anything legally to take action to get rid of it, because it was not true. And, you know, he had no affiliation with the Royal Kapuna Exchange, and he had no knowledge of what was going on. And then it all occurred while he was in prison. And anybody who's been in the prison system knows there's little to no contact with the outside world. I mean, you've got to have an approved phone list. There's an approved email list. So had he been even involved in any of this, there would have been proof of it. But there, of course, he was not involved. But I explained to QE that the internet is one of the most amazing places for information. It's a great blessing, and at the same time a great curse, because it can spread wonderful information and inform the people, but in the same respect, it can also spread a lot of disinformation. So people have got to be able to use their own powers of discernment. And once something makes it on the internet, like Lanny was saying, I mean, needing intellectual property attorney, I have firsthand experience with this, it is literally almost impossible to get rid of it. Because you can, like Lanny was saying, you can go after the web host, you can go after the ISP providers, you can go after, but at the end of the day, it is stored in the ethers, and you can always find it. So even when I was searching for it, it was still popping up. So Kaylee was very adamant that I try and do something about that. It's a very difficult road once misinformation is printed to get rid of it completely. Lanny did some great work in getting a lot of it taken down, but I don't think it will ever be fully removed from the website. But what my advice to Kaylee was, you know what you've done and what you have not done. You know this is false. Anybody who knows you knows this is false. And as you move the nation forward, there's going to be a lot of people out there that are going to spread disinformation about you. It's just the nature of the beast. So you've got to be able to rise above it. I mean, it happens to all nations, right? Leaders. There's a lot of websites out there about Obama and about the president of Russia. It's going to happen, and so we kind of have to not spend too much energy on it. We must focus our energies more on moving the nation forward and the positive work that we're doing, and not on the disinformation that's on the internet.
Yes.
And there's one other aspect of this that I just want to touch on. We don't have any evidence to support this, but when the king was in prison, I do have evidence on this, when the king was in prison, there were covert actions being run against him in the prison. People pretending to be foreign government representatives dealing with him about restoration of the kingdom, when in fact they were United States agents who were dealing with him, not foreign representatives. And because I saw that level of targeting on him for covert actions, I was always concerned about where that man with the gold came from. And was he sent to destroy this group that had formed a government to restore the nation, to restore the kingdom of Hawaii? We don't know. We do know that he was involved in other scams. Whether he was a tool for the United States national security apparatus or simply a scam artist, we don't know, but it's one of those question marks that hangs over the history.
Right. Well, I think that really gives at least a bigger picture. I don't know about for anybody else, but for me, I wasn't aware of all the, you know, how this came about and what people were talking about. So I think hopefully this will help some people understand, and I will post your letter, Lanny, that you wrote, like I said, and you do have some others you have some other people who basically wrote an affidavit that,
We identified a couple of people just really recently, within the last year, who were involved with the Royal Kapuna Exchange episode.
Right.
And were telling us that when they were involved, they never even heard Kaliki's name mentioned, let alone him being somehow a part of it. So we got declarations from them on what they knew about his not even being part of it.
Right. Well, I think that, I'll post whatever I have from you at the moment and just so people can take a look and if they, you know, they can all make up their own mind. And I feel that the important thing is no matter what happens, sometimes we have to address these things and then, but not stop, just not let that stop us because we're
right.
always moving forward. So, so I would, if we're about 30 minutes into the show here, and I think it would be great to talk about a couple of documents that have been, that were posted on the Kingdom of Hawaii info, kingdomofhawaii.info website, and that I actually hadn't fully read. There's the Vision and Plan, and then there's the Aloha Aina Project, which I understand the Aloha Aina Project document is actually sort of a part of the Vision and Plan. Is that correct, Lenny?
That is correct.
Jennifer?
The Vision and Plan has sort of the combination of the high-level documents, of
right.
which the Aloha Aina Project is one.
Right. Jennifer, have you read both of those documents? All?
I have. I have.
And one of the things that, well, I want to, let's talk about the Aloha Aina, just basically the, I think the Vision and Plan, as I was reading through it, it has a lot of, it does have a lot of history, and it really goes through in detail. I noticed like the history of the, you know, some of the history of how the islands were, how Hawaii, the Kingdom of Hawaii was taken over, and there's parts of it like that that go through some of the history. How about if we talk about the Aloha Aina Project? And where did that come from? And is it something that how did this come to pass? Now this is as I understand it, it's several areas that are that the king wants to address as the kingdom comes back online. Who would like to talk about that first? I'm being a good host. I'll give you an opportunity.
I think it should be Lanny because he was working closely with the king through the creation of these documents.
Okay.
And I think that the easiest summary of how they came about is that this is a divinely inspired document that the king has brought forward
yes.
as a vision for restoration. And I think it's important to understand that a big part of what he's talking about is restoration. So in these documents, he does talk about what Hawaii was like in ancient times before contact and before Western civilization came and destroyed the Hawaiian civilization. So you had a civilization that was basically an island civilization that was self-reliant, that was had a food system that delivered very nutritious food and abundant food, that had a political system that was designed for sustainability. The whole way it was organized, both geographically and socially and economically, was to maintain the civilization in a high state of health. All and had a very comprehensive medicinal system based on the plants available in the islands. On and on it went. It was an incredibly sophisticated civilization that existed prior to contact. And unfortunately, when the Europeans came, all they saw were savages. They had no understanding or interest in understanding the incredibly complex system that had been developed over thousands of years among the island civilizations, including Hawaii. So restoration is a key part of what's being called for here. So to bring back things that were beneficial, like the food, like the economic system, like the social structures, that served well the civilization at that time. And in the Aloha Aina Project, what he's looking at are the different major areas, agriculture and food,
right.
the whole system of health and wellness, the housing and community development projects, science and technology, how the economy will be organized, how education will be revised
right.
to make it both practical and substantive for survival, and an important, very important part of the Aloha Aina project, and one that has captured international attention, is the establishment of a peace center and the bringing forth of the conflict resolution techniques that were perfected over hundreds of years in Hawaii, known as Ho'oponopono, and to offer to the rest of the world the services of the kingdom as a non-aligned nation to help resolve conflicts that are taking place in other parts of the world, or to resolve things that could become conflicts. And it's an alternative, yeah, essentially, to the United Nations, which has not been able to serve that purpose, but is a very visionary idea of a peace center in Hawaii to which people would come and from which ambassadors would roam the planet helping to resolve conflicts. So all of that is built into the Aloha Aina project, and anyone can read the full document on the website you mentioned, kingdomofhawaii.info.
Yes. And it's about, I think it's about 30 pages or so, 32 pages. And if I'd like to just briefly, I found seven major areas, and I'd just like to mention these, and maybe I could get a comment from each of you on things that you might see important within each, not necessarily everyone, but within each area. I found seven. There's the Ahupua'a Project, which is food and agriculture, Ola Pono, health and wellness, Kaulana Kauhale, housing and community, Hoamana Ake Akamai, science and technology, Kumu Waiwai, which is economy and resources, Ike Ho Project, new vision and education, and the last one in the group is Ho'oponopono, the conflict resolution. And I think that's these areas are very well described and in detail. Jennifer, is there any particular one of these that you perhaps would like to comment on, or perhaps your ideas about what moving forward will be like for the kingdom in these areas?
Well, I think, you know, why this document is so special is because it's not so much reinventing the wheel as it is going back to a system that already worked very, very well before the U.S. government's illegal occupation. So, in all the different areas, it is a model in my mind for how we really should be organizing our nations all over the world, because it's a way of living amongst each other in a very cooperative, mutually beneficial way, and as well as working with the land and treating the land with the same respect and the same love that you would for another human being, because the way that the kingdom is envisioned in those categories is that you work with the land. In Hawaiian culture, the land is actually considered to be a part of the Hawaiian people genealogy. It is where they've come from. They come from the land. They come from the ocean. Broken down into its simplest form, we all are connected in that way. And these categories actually address these sections of the government in a way where it's people and land working together. Because without the land, the people cannot be. And the Hawaiians understood that. And so for me, it's very special because it's actually taking from the history of what really worked well before and implementing it now in the future at a time when Mother Earth needs it so desperately.
Yes. Well, you know, we've talked from time to time about you being, as a Chief Justice. I know we've talked about, occasionally you've shared some of your ideas about, let's look at the Ho'oponopono, the conflict resolution, as how do you see the system in the Kingdom of Hawaii? For example, if someone is, say, causing some trouble or something like that, can you give us an idea of how that might be resolved in the arenas that you might be involved in setting up?
Yeah, I see it as a twofold kind of a process. One being that the laws of the nation should be written in such a fashion as any person living in that nation can look at the laws and understand what rules and what philosophy they're expected to abide by if they want to live in that nation. You should not need to pay an attorney $500 an hour to explain to you what the laws of your nation are. So I believe that the first part of the system is creating an easily understandable system that anybody can say, okay, this is what's expected of me, and this is what I need to be doing to live in this nation under its laws, under the guidance of the leader of the nation. So that would be the first step. And the second step would be, the court systems as they exist today are very commercial in nature. They're all about money, 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 money. Even the crimes have values attached to them, and even the prisons make money off the prisoners being inside of them. So that's a really flawed system in my mind. The justice system should never be about commercialism. It should be about truth and justice. And I envision a legal system here in the islands where if you wronged somebody, the two injured parties or the two parties in question come into the court system and they have their case heard by a jury, and the jury decides, okay, this is what, you know, this person did take money from that person, and the punishment actually fits the crime. Because it's never made any sense to me how if someone is accused of wire fraud or stealing or any of that, how anybody has benefited from putting them in a box. I think if you make a mistake, you make an error, you harm somebody, you have to hold upon a point, or you make it right. So if a jury decides that, hey, you know, you've taken this money, and you've got to go out, and your punishment is you've got to go out and get a job, and you've got to pay them 20% of your paycheck for X amount of time until that money is reimbursed. Or if you damage their property, you have to go on their property, and you've got to help make it right. You've got to fix it. That is a system, to me, that is truly just. I think really only the most violent of offenders have an actual place inside of a jail cell. Other than that, the jail systems have never made much sense to me. Because it doesn't actually help the harmed party, and it doesn't help the person who did the damage actually help. It doesn't help them make amends or correct their mistakes.
Yes. Well, Lanny, do you have any thoughts about that?
Oh, basically, I would say amen. You know, the idea is to develop a system that helps people to correct what they've done wrong. I don't think anybody that knows anything about the prisons in the United States, for example, believes that there's any rehabilitation going on in those prisons. There's nothing but abuse.
Right.
And when I've gone into prisons and seen the relationship between the guards and the inmates, it's not a healthy relationship. It's a domination relationship. So anything we can do to keep people out of that situation and find alternative pathways is what we want to do. And there are people already in the islands who have developed a Ho'oponopono diversion program to take people out of the Western justice system and put them into a Ho'oponopono system to try and restore them to their proper place in the society. And that's going to be one of the things that's done. Among the many pieces of the Aloha Aina project, besides the peacemaking one, which I think is probably, well, to me, in terms of consciousness and what we're trying to do, the peace center is the pinnacle. That's the highest goal that we have. What we're trying to do is bring principles of Aloha, peace, harmony, unconditional love, respect, tolerance, cooperation, all those things that we know are the best way for people to relate to each other and to relate to the natural world, to work towards that being what we bring to the world and what people understand and learn from and aspire to. So for me, that's the highest value in the whole Aloha Haina project, is the Peace Center and its goals. But at the same time, just practically, the people of Hawaii supported themselves in their island with no imports, and they supported probably 750,000 people in the islands with no imports. Right now, Hawaii imports 95% of the food it eats. And that has not only brought a bad diet to Hawaii, it has made Hawaii dependent on a transportation and delivery system that's extraordinarily vulnerable. If the ships don't arrive, for what if there's a strike and there's no ships for 3 days, the island runs out of food. Well, we need to get back to the way it was before, where people grew their own food. There was plenty of food. It was shared by everyone. It was healthy food, full of nutrition, not grown in soil that's been totally depleted of any nutritional value by the overuse of fossil fuel-derived fertilizers and things like that. So there's a major restoration component to get back to where we have a self-sustaining, self-reliant civilization in the islands.
Yes. Well, in fact, the...
And if I could...
Yeah, go ahead, Jennifer.
If I could comment on that, too. It is, when you really think about it, it's absolutely ludicrous that in a nation, and I'm, you know, living on the islands now for the last 2 years, I've seen it firsthand, in a nation where everything grows so well, I mean, there's four or five different ecosystems that exist on these islands. In a nation where you can pretty much grow anything, annuals, perennials, it doesn't matter, they'll grow here in abundance. And to see the amount of land that is being used by these corporations, Alexander and Baldwin and others, to grow sugarcane and Monsanto and their GMO crops, it is ludicrous because we have the soil and the conditions here to not only feed the islands 100% 10 times over, but also to export to other nations because the food does grow so well here. I mean, avocados can be as large as a human's head. So, and that's all from just the natural conditions. So it should seem ludicrous to anybody that a nation that should grow its own food so well has 95% imports. And I think that was done by design because of the illegal occupation of the kingdom as a way to keep the nation, the kingdom, subservient to the U.S. government and to keep the government basically able to pin the nation down and say, you want to mess with us, we'll stop your imports. So it's really, really important that we implement the Aloha Aina Project and that part of that Lanny was talking about immediately because it is so necessary for our future and for the future of these lands, getting the GMO crops and the sugarcane off and helping to heal the soil and growing our own food that we did over 120 years ago.
Well, I know that many people here on the islands do that individually, but it's one of those things that's not very well supported by the, you know, I call it the corporate system that's been put in place over here. You know, I kind of see that one of the things that stood out as I was looking through this document last night was, you know, the emphasis on, for example, on tourism. And I remember people say, well, we've got to, you know, we need to increase tourism and what is it going to do for the tourist industry? And, oh, we're losing this and we're losing that. You know, I wonder if you could just comment on that particular aspect of it. Because I know a lot of people have come here and they love to come here. But it's how does that balance out with when the kingdom, as the kingdom is being restored, how is that going to be worked in with the kingdom system? I mean, I'm sure people have questions like this. I still want to come to Hawaii, they say. I want to come to Hawaii and have a great vacation.
Annie, would you mind if I commented on this, Lady?
Yeah, please.
Go ahead.
So, Kitty, and I'm sure that you are aware, the kingdom was always welcoming visitors to the island. That was in the Aloha fashion. Of course, people who want to come and visit have always been welcome in the kingdom. The problem right now is that the islands, the archipelago, are completely reliant on this tourism to survive. And the other aspect of that, the tourism as it exists today is simply not sustainable. And what I mean by that is that, you know, there's we have natural water paths that exist on the island where when the rain comes, it comes down the mountain and it filters the water all throughout the land and it keeps the land growing and healthy. And what the corporations have done is they've created these water tunnels, or they're like little, they build these basically these drainage systems into the island that is diverting a huge source of our water supply into the hotels. And because of that, parts of the island that should be thriving are dried out and dying. So the tourism, and I was speaking to the king about this a few months ago, the tourism, of course, will always be a part of the islands, but it will not be what we rely on to survive, and it will be in a sustainable nature, a way that we can actually have a tourism that does not kill the resources that we have here. It's got to be in a more sustainable fashion.
Yes. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, go ahead, Lenny.
I was just going to say, and what we're looking for is a different kind of tourism. Right now, the hula is a sacred dance, and it's presented at hotels in luaus as entertainment. And the disrespect, the profound disrespect that is shown for the host culture is something most people are simply unaware of. However, it's there on a daily basis. It's very real, and it's very painful for the Hawaiian community to witness. So when tourists come to Hawaii and the local population is there to serve them or to entertain them, and that's the experience that they get of the local community, they're missing what Hawaii is really about. They feel it, absolutely. I mean, we're expecting, once people understand what the restoration is about and the movement that's happening, we're expecting very broad international support because people love Hawaii, particularly anybody that's ever been there. They can feel the mana, they can feel the love, they can feel the aloha. But what they don't see is the true conditions of the people of Hawaii, and particularly the people of Hawaiian ancestry, who have been living under an occupation and oppression for 120, 130 years. That's got to change. So there may be areas where tourists will be asked not to go, where the existing indigenous civilization, if you will be allowed to flourish in its own way without having strangers dropping in to be entertained with luaus.
Right. Like the island of Niihau. I don't know the whole story about that, and we won't get into that here, but well, we're reaching about the 50 minute mark, so I think maybe this is a good time to start to wind up this show, and I really appreciate both of you coming on to share your and when you say you share your mana'o.
Mana'o, yes.
And that means
really means not only your thoughts, but it means your heartfelt thoughts.
Yes, yes.
You know, what is it you really feel? Why do you feel that way? You know, share yourself with me, not just, you know, talky, talky, talky.
Well, are there any final, I'll give each of you the opportunity to share any mana'o that you get from your na'au, which is your gut, right? Your solar plexus.
Right.
As a final message, perhaps, to the listeners here. Who'd like to go first?
I just want to do one quick thing with you. You have set up a way that people can make a contribution to help defray the expenses
yes.
of this movement. Would you please tell people how they can do that? Because it's really important. It's a barefoot campaign, but it's nice to be able to have some shorts on while you're doing it.
Well, there are two ways to do this. One way is by going to the Kawila Pele blog, which if you go to the blog in the upper right, there is a Kingdom of Hawaii shield. Just below the shield, you can click the link which says click here if you would like to kokua, assist the kingdom. The other way, and that will take you directly to the assist us page at the Kingdom of Hawaii info.wordpress.com blog. You can also go to that blog, click the Kokua Assist Us page or the little icon on the right which says Kokua, and that will take you directly to a place where you can either contribute money or write down your services that you might want to offer to the kingdom. Thank you.
Jennifer, do you have anything to share as a final thought?
Yeah, actually, it was kind of based on something that Annie had said a little bit earlier about the mana here on the islands and how people love Hawaii. And I think that spirit has basically compelled me to come here because I truly, truly believe, based on what Annie was saying, that, I mean, people really do love these islands. The energy here is incredible. And I truly feel that the restoration of the kingdom isn't just about the kingdom, because it is, of course, the kingdom. I do believe that because of how special this place is, it's an opportunity for us to really get it right here, to do things a better way, to be an example for the rest of the world, because everyone loves Hawaii. So if we can fix it here, if we can heal what's happened here, if we can repair the damage and repair the decapitated spirits of the Hawaiian people, we can help to heal the rest of the world. That is my thoughts on how important the restoration of the kingdom is.
Yes.
Amen again.
Amen. Lanny, do you have any final thoughts from your viewpoint?
I just hope that people will stay tuned to what's going on. And if people would like to be on our mailing list to receive communications that are issued by the kingdom,
yes,
they can send me an email to Lanny, Lanny, .Sinkin, Sinkin, at kingdomofhawaii.info. So it's Lanny.Sinkin, at kingdomofhawaii.info, and I will add you to our mailing list for anything that comes out from the kingdom.
Great. Well, mahalo nui for both of you for being on the show today and for sharing your thoughts and your heartfelt opinions, or not opinions, but all the information that you shared. And so with that, we will say for today, we will say aloha and be with light, go with light, and thank you all for listening, everyone out there on the planet, and we will be back again for sure. Say aloha, everyone.
Aloha.
Aloha. Thank you, KP.
Thank you, KP.
We the warriors born to live what the land that she can give. Defend our birthright to be free. Give our children liberty. Ea la ea, 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 ea. Ea la ea, ea, ea.